Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom." With all that, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream at that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. You can also go to abbtoomey.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there now also. That's www.abibitumi.com/timeforanawakening. Catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. In that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream your program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, it's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening Media. Interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out the Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. Various African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 8:07 here in the city of Philadelphia on this Friday evening, and we're in Freestyle Friday mode here on Time for an Awakening. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call and we'll talk about it. And you can always reach us to do that by dialing 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m., for podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:12 here in the city of Philadelphia on this Friday evening. And before we get started with our program, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Hey, little Elliot, you know, they had a little party, I see, this week.
Yeah, I see. It didn't surprise me. I mean, I don't know why it surprised them, but yeah, they had a big party.
You know, I noticed there's a lot of commentary on both sides, you know. And Elliot, I'm really interested to see with the Time for Awakening audience. I mean, you know, knowing that this is Freestyle Friday and, you know, they can say whatever on their mind, but I like to see what different people think about what was experienced, you know, for us who And, you know, for those of us who looked it on, as you say, the television, because from what I get, it was a show.
Now, when you say opinions on both sides, go into that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because for me, I noticed Black folks immediately, I hear this thing. One is my capital.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I've heard that, you know, like the insult of what these people did to my capital. And this is Black folks speaking. And I raised that primarily. What it made me do is reflect on, you know, as you say, not necessarily being surprised, but, you know, seeing that, like, that's what, but I never, because I'm centered in my sovereign thinking, I unfortunately don't see this as my capital.
Oh, I don't either, you know, but go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I mean, does that make sense?
Yes, but I'm glad that you mentioned that because, Richard, that what does that show you about the thinking of some of our people? And sometimes the subconscious things that just come out of their mouth without thinking. Because I've heard the same thing. Oh, look what they did to, you know, this is not how we should be as a nation. Look at what they're doing in our capital. And then they turn around with another voice and said, if it was Black people marching like that, we wouldn't have been allowed.
What the hell?
If that's the case, then what are we doing? What are we doing?
I said to say, and that was the twin thing. And I said, is this, Elliot, I don't want to, because I'm a believer. I understand that, you know, when we look over the history of what I call American Africans, because we constantly reinforce the narrative of, you know, we fought in every war, this is our country, you know, we, you know, like, and even when they were, had those, was trying to, to displace free Africans back to Liberia or Sierra Leone. And, you know, they made the decision. I mean, they made the decision, you know, that of the American colonization, they made the decision, no, we're staying in spite of all that. So I get that history. And then that we fought in the Civil War, the First World War, the Second World War, the Korean War, you know, the Spanish-American War, you know, I get there. And at the same time, all those other things, and that's, I don't know if that shaped my understanding, and I might be a, you know, minority, and I'm speaking personally, because it may be a group that, like, I just can't see where this place is saying it has, what they constructed is for me. So I have to think from a perspective of, at some point, we're going to govern ourselves. But when I hear, on one hand, people saying my capital, my, you know, or our capital, and then on the other hand, if it was us, they would tear gas us, they would shoot us, there would be the National Guard. Like that, like, I don't see how those two fit.
They don't fit. Exactly. You're exactly right. They don't fit. And the question is, then what are we doing? And I'm not necessarily talking about the grassroots people, because people on the ground see what's happening. I'm talking about, what is this leadership doing? What are they talking about? When they get out there and make stupid statements like this, if Black Lives Matter, I mean, Black Lives Matter just popped up on the scene maybe a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But everything is if Black Lives Matter did it. Come on. Listen, if our people had done that before any Black Lives Matter appeared, if they had done that 10 years ago, 20 years ago, before it was any Black Lives Matter, they would have been gunned down. Don't use no Black Lives Matter as no barometer of our experiences here. It don't make sense.
And I didn't want to, because I wanted to reinforce that, whether you have, whether you call it white privilege or not, what they did ain't nothing new.
No, it's
in
not.
In this country.
No.
And their response to them ain't nothing new. But
Wait a minute. But you hear how they've been characterizing it, Richard. Like, this is an anomaly. It's something that never has happened. You heard a couple of people go back in their history and point out that it happened before. But they said that the British did it when they, scaled the walls or whatever. But these type of rebellions have happened with white folks before on several occasions. Go ahead.
Right.
Go ahead.
And I wanted to give two. Like at the early making, one before the 1776 and one after. And you can go on and on, but using Philadelphia, in January 1764, the Paxton Boys marched towards Philadelphia with 250 men to challenge the government for failing to protect them. Benjamin Franklin led a group of civic leaders to meet them in Germantown and then a separate settlement northwest of the city and hear their grievance. After the leaders agreed to read the men's pamphlet of issues before the colonial legislators, the mob agreed to disperse. They was coming after them. Right? Now that's in 1764. And that's because they wanted that land as they was moving, and they were killing the Chattanooga Indians, or Native people. I just don't mean to say Indians, the Aboriginal people, and to take the land, but they were the government people saying, like, look, don't create hostility at that stage. But then later on, and this, so 76, 30 years later, 1794, they had the Whiskey Rebellion. And the whiskey is, and they called it an insurrection. Now, at that point now, they got a government, right? This is the American government. And its group, it was a tax protest in the United States beginning in 1791 and ending in 1794. During the presidency of George Washington. Under the command of an American Revolutionary War veteran Major James McFarlane, the so-called whiskey tax was the first tax imposed on a domestic product by the newly formed federal government. Beer was difficult to transport and spoiled more easily than rum and whiskey. Rum distilled in the United States had been disrupted during the American War of Independence, and for factors described below, whiskey distributed and consumption increased after the Revolutionary War. Aggregate production had not suppressed rum by 1791. The whiskey tax became law in 1791 and was intended to generate revenue for the war debt incurred during the Revolutionary War. And these guys said, wait a minute, whoa. Because they're the one that's producing this whiskey, right? Now, in order to produce whiskey, I believe you need rum. I mean, you need cane, barley, right? I mean, now, I got to get, with rum, you need barley. With whiskey, I think you need oats. I'm not sure. But the point is, they're saying, the farmers are saying, y'all back in the government want to tax us so that you can raise money to pay the war bonds, right, that you owe to France for the money that you borrowed to fight the war. And they wasn't having it. And they rebelled. Well, I think that, you know, when you add up the thing, you know, Dr. Clark tells us to look at, not just look at African history, but look at European history. And that's why I wanted to bring those points up. Because, like you said, these things is not new to white folks in their relationship with each other.
Yeah, it's not. You didn't mention the draft riots that this country had. When white folks went on massacre rampage and was killing blacks, any black that they seen, they burned offices, orphanages. Was any black that was in on the streets of New York, they was stringing them up and then fighting and killing one another. Troops had to be called in. This type of violence among nationalist whites, and that's what they were. Right. They try to chain rioters and all this stuff. They're nationalist whites. Trump called these people. Listen, this mentality among whites was here long before Trump was ever born, his daddy born. They've been here as long as Europeans been here. That same nationalist mentality. All of them are nationalists. Biden's a nationalist. He just don't talk stupid like his brother, Donald Trump. And he keeps it more... He's not as overt and ignorant as his brother Donald Trump, but he's just as much a nationalist as Donald Trump. Just as much.
And that was one of the thoughts I had in relationship to being, you know, this, because what they're what these white folks are saying, and they're centered now as was Trumpites. And they're saying, and what the commentators are saying, that they are, as you said, they're the nationalists, but they're in conflict within the government with the globalists, the ones who, which when they say globalists, right, they're saying the transnational organizations, the ones who took their factory jobs out of America and left their communities desolated, left white men from in the age, you know, and this is a repeat thing we bring up, that these white men between 24 and 54, they have nothing to look forward to. That's what Trump galvanized, right? Under the national sentiment. And the economists, you know, I mean, even under Obama, his economic advisor, Larry Summers, you know, who was over at Harvard, he said that this is going to be a problem for this country, because in the transnational organizations taking the manufacturing jobs over to other countries and just bringing back products, it was okay when they were able to get cheap products. But now, when it grew to where more and more of them, weren't getting no jobs, and these rural areas have these men sitting out. Because remember, I mean, you don't hear it now, but what happened to the opioid crisis?
Yeah, you know, well, all that's on the back burner now because this pandemic is going on. The problems are still here.
And are we to believe that none of those guys? And I know I'm just, you know, taking very, I recognize, you know, and it's up for the audience to the real people like me, and you know, by like, wait a minute, hold it down. You just talking out your head. But are we supposed to say none of them? None of them people are part of these groups who ain't got nothing to do to be able to show up in the numbers that they're showing up to be able to, and they showing up fortified. The little snippets I seen, them guys is like, they got backpacks, they may got their bombs, they got their guns, you know, and they able to get there.
Yeah. That's a tradition in this country, Richard. But it was always an alliance between, sometimes it was an alliance between the government and these nationalists.
Right.
If you look at the Black Farmers Alliance, when our people formed that union.
Right.
And then had the cotton picker strike, where they wanted wages and they wanted to be paid a decent wage. And the government, along with white nationalists, attacked and murdered hundreds of our people in Arkansas in the 1890s. The same thing happened in Wilmington when they wanted to form basically a political union. but they wanted to establish an agenda among blacks at that time. And they were attacked in collusion with the government and nationalists. Mm-hmm. And you see what happened. We don't have to go on what happened in Tulsa because we know what happened. But these nationalists have a track record of doing this. But it usually had been in cohesion or in an alliance with the government. But when you see this stuff happening, it shouldn't be no surprise with black folks. The thing that kind of shocked me, Richard, that I didn't like
is I agree.
The footage when they bust in that place and that Capitol Guard, black guy. Now, I assume he had a gun. He should have, because all of them have weapons.
Right.
When they bust in there and he threw that stick and ran up the step when they was running behind. I mean, you know, come on, man.
Yeah.
Come on. That was your perfect opportunity to turn around and unload just like other white cops do when they see a black and say that they fear for their life. If that wasn't a thing where you fear for your life, I don't know what is.
And it seemed
he should have unloaded on a couple of them, like, because a couple of them got killed there.
Right.
He should have been one of them that unloaded on one of them, but he wasn't. He'd run like a chump up the steps. They should have caught him and put their foot through his behind. You know, come on, man. That was your opportunity. That was your opportunity to get some get back. What did James Brown say? Payback.
You know, but it seemed like it was a command for the...
because you could see it. They showed some footage where some of the cops was removing the barriers so their brethren could get in. I could see that it was a command decision. But listen, if I'm a black man and they chasing me, and the hell with a command decision. I would have used my revolver and then deal with let the chips fall with me.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, going back to why we, you hear my confliction, right? Because I can understand, you know, I'm going back to that same point, you know, why those who are centered in this. But the question comes, I know what it was, when you raised about the farmers and the union, you know, because people talk about that if the class thing is addressed, because these are supposed to be poor working whites who are having an issue with the federal government, and that black and whites who are, you know, obviously in the same, supposedly the same economic condition, is supposed to be able to lock arms against the government, you know, and get government and corporations to, you know, provide the kind of livelihood that Americans are supposed to have. And I'm thinking, well, you know, as you're saying, in history, where these moments have been, it's always once whites get satisfied, blacks don't get satisfied, they okay with that. So does that mean class is not really the crux of this when it gets to that expressing that national sentiment? Because I don't know if you think, Elliot, you think that the policyholders, you know, as Biden come in, is going to find some way to satisfy these Trumpites in some kind of way?
Wait a minute. Repeat that again, Richard.
Do you think that the Biden people are, you know, because they're talking about locking some up, but it's a lot of them. When you look at the vote, a lot of white people voted for Trump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So are they going to create policy to try to curtail their disillusionment with the government?
Well, that's their brethren. So I believe that they're going to do all they can to try to mend fences and try to bring this, try to tamp this sentiment down. Certainly. That's what it's all about. In fact, you hear these politicians. In fact, you're that black guy that won down there in Atlanta, in Georgia the other day. Mm-hmm. He made the same, well, I wasn't surprised. He made the same statement that you hear all of these black politicians, and I'm putting the onus on black politicians, I'm going to work just as hard for the ones that didn't vote for me as the ones that did. Now, that don't even make no sense at all. That's the citadel of those nationalists down there in Georgia. The citadel. All of them southern states. Georgia should be the capital. And you're talking about you going to work as hard for them people as you are for your own? Your own people is the one that put his ass in that office. And how are you going to make a statement talking about I'm going to work as hard for them as it was for the people that voted for me? Aren't you tired of black people saying that dumbass statement? And I'm sorry to use the language, but sometimes it just frustrates me when I hear some of this misleadership class say that type of ignorance. And some of our people that didn't went out there and pulled the levers for them, it's going to be more, unless somebody turns out to be kind of like the spook that sat by the door, it's going to be more of the same stuff in 4 years, if it was 2 years, whatever, however many years their term lasts, our people going to be dissatisfied with some of the performance of these people.
And, you know, when you said that, and I didn't hear that, he didn't even have to say that. That might have been in his mind, but he didn't have. It's like, what? And it goes back to that, our capital, and if it was us. Like, we have to. What is in our psychology? Is that what the boys was talking about? Our double consciousness? Is it? And I'm not excluding myself. You know, I'm trying to help myself by saying, look, I, and pushing sovereign thinking. I'm saying we have to think like. We know that this is the way American nationalists operate. We know that we're in a hostile environment. We know that we have to create some kind of infrastructures to support ourselves. We know that the government supports those nationalists in these moments of crisis, no matter that our condition is similar. And we have to... to the best of our, not even best of our ability, we have to, you know, actually figure out how we're going to survive in this moment. It's imperative. But that's, to me, is sovereign thinking compared to, well, we're all Americans and America has to figure out how it's going to address those hooligans, those subversionists, those, you know, they want to go on terrorists or you know, how they're going to deal with them, knowing that they know that they got to deal with them. And when they deal with them, is what they dealing with them going to satisfy us? Because there's no going to be no all out. There's still no all out affair to deal with the police that's unjustly shooting black people down.
Yeah, that's continuing on. That ain't stopped, and it ain't going to stop. But, yeah, that has been pushed on the back burner. And what's the name told him in that private meeting that became public that he wanted them to stop talking about that and deal with something, deal with what he wanted them to deal with. But let's go to a caller here. Let's go to Ohio. Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from? Caller, are you there?
Oh, no, I'm just observing. I'm just listening.
Well,
just
listening. This ain't a tennis match, brother, and I'm just kidding with you. I want your opinion now. Throw something in the mix. You done seen stuff that been going on all week. Let me hear something.
I mean, really, I mean.
I'm just listening. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I mean, people might not agree with how I see things.
Well, let me hear.
I'm big against like this, the whole media, like the big mainstream interpretation of a lot of stuff. Like, I mean, what they did in D.C. was over the top. But to say like, I mean, I'm not here to pick sides. I don't want to put too much attention on those people who went out there and cut up and acted a fool. Because like, when black folks get, you know, harmed and, you know, wronged, you know, you gotta like weigh out that attention. Like, it's wild. Like, I mean, I've never seen anything like that before. And at least in, you know, you know, it's really, it was spontaneous, but I mean, people, I mean, I understand why people are angry. I'll say that. And like, I'm not, I mean, I can't sit here. I didn't vote for Biden. There's no way in hell I could do anything like that. I mean, I'm just one for just, I look at, you know, the big picture. I pay attention to like what is going on out here. I mean, I'm just saying focus on what is about to happen, the people who are going to be out here doing and being in positions and stuff and their relative influence. Cause I mean, I'm just worried about just, you know, the economy and making sure that people are not like black folks is just not like catching just the short end of the stick again on a Democratic administration. That's my big concern. I'm really not keen on Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and whoever else they're about to throw out there, you know, to represent and administrate for us. Because I mean, you can just do a cursory look on some of these people's history, and I mean, it's all bad, man. It's nothing to glorify or celebrate at all.
Well, I'm just asking, I agree personally, I guess. From the point of let's look at this systemically, right? And when you say about the economy, let's look at it from a systems perspective. Because isn't that there, what would happen, this spontaneous action at the Capitol, isn't it those, what we call white nationalists, aren't they responding to their economic displacement and their frustration and dissatisfaction with in relationship to the not just the Democratic Party, but somewhat about the politicians in general not addressing their economic or quality of life needs? Isn't that what they're demonstrating or they're reacting to, as you see it?
You know what, Richard, call back, because you had expressed a thought. And I wanted to kind of go into that with you, and Richard had a question for you, but your call dropped. So give us a call back, caller from Ohio. Let's go over here to, no, I think that's him coming back, Richard.
Is that it?
I think it is. Let's give him a second here. While we're waiting for him to come back, let's go to 404. 404, are you there?
Hey, y'all hear me? How y'all hear me, Richard? Y'all hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir, man. Hey,
Do me a favor, Wes. Hold on. Let me get, because the caller dropped when he was in mid-thought. Let me get him back on, and then we'll come to you.
All right. Okay.
Caller from Ohio, your call dropped. Richard was saying something.
I was just asking, brother, whether you see that group that was expressing systemically, are they expressing about their economic displacement?
I mean, the people who was in D.C., I mean,
yeah.
How would I say? I mean, I think it's a big cultural thing. I mean, a big part of it's just the cultural thing the foreshadowing of what is to come. And I mean, if I try to have a degree of like putting myself in the perspective of a lot of people who are upset enough to like, again, I mean, I've seen the jokes, like if black people came out like that, you know, it'd be bodies all across the, you know what I'm saying? All across the Capitol, you know what I'm saying? It's like the way that, how would I say it? I mean, I'm just not, I know why people are passionate about Trump, because I mean, I think that when you go from a Barack Obama to a Donald Trump, and I mean, Donald Trump was not a politician. He's not a senator. He's not a governor. He's not a pre-made governmental official. He's not a bureaucrat. He's a businessman. I guess you would have to like assume that you might need some money, you know. But I mean, but the problem is, if you're, let's say someone who isn't like a politician, who is like just like a random person, you know, it's really hard to get someone who is like maybe not self-made as much to like, and even, you know, you might, you know, I mean, someone, I'm not trying to like say one way or another, but someone who might not have as much clout, they tend to be more propped up by people in government. And it's like the whole outsider thing with Donald Trump is like, He wasn't. I mean, Joe Biden wasn't in office for 8 years already. It's like then you have people like, I mean, Kamala Harris isn't black. It's like this is like bald faced stuff, but she can go along saying this stuff. Black women then say, well, yeah, she's one of us type of things, and no one gives any kind of like hard scrutiny. And no one, there's no kind of just like pressure and like in a lot of like, you know, black prominent media people just really sidestep, don't just like pin it on them that like, man, you're not what you represent. And like, you need, and like, you know, there's just so much of that. I'm not worried. I'm just like, I'm a little apprehensive, but like, you know, I mean, I don't think they're going to be very successful, especially if they try to look Joe Biden in the Crime Act. These are things that are just basic. And these people who kind of comebacks, everything about the campaign of Joe Biden compared to Donald Trump, like he was just in. I mean, he's an older look. I mean,
well,
let
me ask
things,
you a question.
You know what I'm saying?
Let me ask you a question. Ideologically,
yeah,
and their vision for America and what it should be and what they would like it to be. Do you think there's any real difference between Donald Trump and Joe Biden?
Man, I think there's an intersect. Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and say they're parallel to one another. I'd be foolish. There is an intersect. I mean, as far as like...
No. When
like,
you say there is an intersect, you're talking about there's a commonality, right?
Well, no, I think that the paths are not parallel to one another in the sense that they're not going in the same direction. I do think that the Democrat, you know, tends to be a little bit more, everyone pulls in their money together and the resources, you know, you tax more and you get more services out to people. The problem is with that is that you have to have revenue. You cannot tax people. You cannot sit here and just tax people. Even people who have relatively a lot, especially if they're like it's not good for people.
Well, see, I'm not talking about domestic. I'm not necessarily talking about domestic policies and the little idiosyncrasies of their different approaches.
Yeah.
I'm talking about their overall approach of how they see America and the worldview and how it should be in their eyes. See, I'm not talking about their ideological approach about who should be taxed.
Well, I think that they're worried about jobs being taken overseas. I think they're worried about foreign influence.
Foreign influence. Yeah. Say, okay, let me hear your perspective on that. Foreign influence.
That's what I'm saying. I think that they're worried about like the worldview. They're worried about foreign influence over what, I mean, it's hard to play, you know, devil's advocate because I'm not gaining from any of this country's foreign adventurism. You know what I'm saying? I get marginal residual stuff like gas is cheaper. You know what I'm saying? And stuff like that. But like,
do you think that they believe that America should be number one in the world at all costs?
Do I think that they think that?
Yes, both of them.
I gotta cut away. I gotta cut away real quick, but I'll be back. I'll be back to listen.
Well, I'll put you on hold.
Thank you for taking my call.
Let's go to Atlanta 404. 404.
Yeah, y'all hear me now?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I can't disagree with nothing you and Richard said, man, about this whole situation. America was started by damn violence. Even that damn building, our ancestors built that building, man. Okay, and you look at the 535 devils that's in them office buildings. Okay, all of them millionaires and billionaires, man. Every one of them. And then when them zombies walked in there, they went to hide, man. All of them millionaires and billionaires. So from where I sit, I wish they would have burned it down to the ground, man.
Well, listen, Brother West, you gave my sentiments exactly. If they had to burn that place down, it wouldn't have made a difference to me.
That's right. It's all back over, man, because them folks ain't nothing but crooks, man, working for the corporations, man.
And, you know, and another thing, and this is a little off the topic, but it's still on the topic. If you know anything about the way Europeans think and the way they deal, you knew, and I'm being real, anybody that was in close contact and worked with Europeans, and I ain't talking about these guys that walk around with suits on like they're on the Fortune 500 level, just the average worker. And some of them, once they get a little liquor in them, they let their hair down. But,
right.
You know, when they went in that place, I told folks that I was talking to that when they bust in there, they didn't just run up and down the halls and go in somebody's offices. I said, I know those people. They done went in there and crapped on the floor, pissed and everything. And didn't they do that?
Yeah, I read that, man. I just read that.
Well, that didn't surprise me at all. That's what Europeans do. They do all kind of crazy stuff. If a bunch of black folks ran in that place, whatever they did, you wouldn't see them crapping and walking in it, tracking it all in people's offices, pissing on floors. I mean, what the hell? What is that? What is that? Maybe a white folk, somebody European can call here and explain to me what's the logic in doing that.
That's just what they are, man. And see, I swear, to God, this disease they got.
Well, and that's another thing, too, and I'm glad that you threw that in. They said that that's a part of spreading this COVID. So how could any lawmaker, and I'm talking about the black ones, how could they turn around and take some vote that same night after them people went in and urinated and defecated all in floors and ran all around, tracking it all around? They need to be tested for COVID-19. And I'm talking about the ones that went back in there and was voting carried on some governmental business that evening after those idiots had ran in there and crapped and pissed all on the floors.
Well, it was beautiful, man. It was beautiful.
What'd you say?
I'm telling everybody, they the one that got that COVID disease. And anybody black?
Well, a lot of people got COVID, black and white. But go ahead. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
Well, you know what I wanted to ask, Brother West, I wanted to ask, do you think that, and it's the question I asked Elliot, that those government officials are going to try to come up with policies to satisfy those people who did do all those things? And would those policies they come up with, if they come up with it, well, do you think that they will come up with it? And is that the policies that will satisfy what black people are arguing about, that put the two senators in, that put the new president in, the vice president? Is it the same? Like, are they going to address their needs because of what they did, even though everybody is dissatisfied of what they did? Do you think that they will come up with things to address their needs?
To address who needs? The people that... Those
mice who broke in the Capitol, you know, urinated, shit on the floor, went and had a party in Pelosi's office. Will they come up with policies to try to appease them?
Well, see, what they're doing now, I heard a couple of them have been arrested, man.
Oh, come on.
I'm hoping that they took them bad crimes, man.
Yeah, they'll arrest them and charge them with disorderly conduct and let them go. It was one guy they interviewed, and this was on the local television here, and he was down there in Atlantic City where he lived, or Margate or somewhere. The guy was home. He was one of the guys that was running up and down in the place. He was home. He wasn't under arrest. And them people that they arrested, they're going to charge him with some old misdemeanors, disorderly conduct, and the people going to go home. Now, they said that one of those guards or something had lost his life.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Now, listen.
One of them got hit in the head with a fire extinguisher.
Yes, by one of the nationalists. Now, hold it. Let's use the move incident as an example. Mm-hmm. And then you might not be aware of it, Wes, but I'm kind of throwing this out to Richard. In the first move conflict that Rizzo and them had, when that officer James Ramp got killed, they found out that it wasn't Move's weapon, they bulldozed the place. But supposedly Move had a revolver in the basement, Richard. You remember that stuff that went out. Mm-hmm. But they said that the bullet that killed that officer did not come from MOVE, because MOVE was in the basement. It came from above. They admitted later on that it was friendly fire that did it. You remember?
Yeah.
You remember, Richard?
Yeah.
But they still charge all of those MOVE members and sent them to jail. Some of them died in jail. A few of them just got let out after 40 years. But they still sent them to jail for the death of that officer. Now, who's going to jail? You think they're going to charge any of them whites that ran all up and down that Capitol, crapping on floors and pissing in offices, stealing computers? You think any of them are going to be charged with any murder down there of that officer down there?
Well,
that's a question. You think any of them going to be charged with that murder?
I say no, because they always, them devils don't never arrest devils. Like all them folks talking about Trump going to jail and all that. These, I ain't never seen now one of them devil presidents got charged with nothing. And see these niggas on all the black people on all the radio stations talking about, oh yeah, they gonna see Trump go to jail. Come on, man. They ain't gonna never lock up their own president. So your question is no.
You know, and Elliot and Brother West, you see the deflection that we're bringing up, because they're bringing up about Trump. And Elliot, your question is valid, because this is a very specific person, officer, who died from a very specific act and incident, and no one's talked. I ain't even heard yet. Who did they catch the person?
Well, they probably wouldn't catch the person, but listen, they didn't, and that's why I gave that example of MOVE. They couldn't finger of all the people that was in the house who did it, so they sent all of them to jail and charged all of them with Ramp's murder. You remember that, Richard?
Right.
So
yeah, I remember that too.
If
man.
They can't figure they
stuff with the bag.
They won't be able to finger who hit that officer upside the head with that fire extinguisher. So send all of them to all of the ones they arrest. They need to send them to jail for murder, but they won't do that. They'll charge them with all types of misdemeanors, maybe a little destruction of government property, and they'll pay a fine and go on home and be business as usual.
Yeah, I agree with you, Elliot. That damn black police was running. He should have opened up and started busting, man. That's what I'd have done. Fear for my life and start busting. You're right. Instead of running, man.
Wes, thanks for your contribution, brother.
Yes, sir, man. I'm sorry that Warnock said that, man. I ain't heard him say it, but damn, man. I hope he don't sign no paper with Israel, man. I'm tired
what,
of
you. Don't, you wait a minute. You said what? You said what? You hope
I'm
he don't what?
This, Elliot.
Wait a minute, you said.
This,
well, you said. You wait a minute. You said you hope he don't do what?
I don't sign that paper with Israel.
Whoa! I'm glad that you said that. Let me. I want to read something to you while you're still on with me.
Okay.
And I want the listening audience to hear it. This is from a published report in the Jewish Post, December the 9th. This is about maybe 3 weeks before the election. Let me read a couple excerpts here. Reverend Raphael Warnock, a Democratic candidate for the U.S. Senate in Georgia, participated in a webinar for the Jewish Democratic Council of America on Tuesday. This was December the 9th, and defended his record on Israel. Republicans sharply criticized Warnock in recent weeks for a sermon he gave in May of 2018, where he said, "We saw the government of Israel shoot down unarmed Palestinians like birds of prey." As I recall that sermon, I was speaking to the issue of activists and human rights and the ability of people to be heard, he said in the webinar that was hosted by former Ambassador Dan Shapiro. "At the same time, I have an increased recognition of Hamas and the danger that they pose to Israel," he continued. I'm a staunch ally and supporter of Israel, and I echo without reservation that it will reflect my work in the Senate. I am a supporter and an advocate for a two-state solution. I see that as a viable way to a democratic Jewish state. I'm committed to that work. I think it deserves attention and focus and my engagement. Excuse me. Reverend Warnock also said he opposed the BDS movement. I will always affirm the right of people to protest nonviolently, but at the same time, I condemn BDS, its refusal to acknowledge Israel's right to exist. I support President Obama's memorandum of understanding. He called Israel the most important ally in the world and said our aid and support of Israel is something I will advance as a Senate member. I want the United States to pay a strong role in assuring Israel's security as a homeland for Jewish people and a leading diplomat, and leading diplomatic efforts to resolve this conflict, he said. I'm looking forward to working in the U.S. Senate as a Jewish leader.
Wow.
To promote strong American diplomacy. I will bring about a lasting peace between Jews and Palestinians. He's going to work in the Senate as a Jewish leader. This is Warnock saying this. These are quotes in this Jewish paper about his allegiance to them, that he's swearing it. What he's going to do in the Senate, I'm going to read it again for the people that might be a little foggy. He said, I'm a staunch ally and supporter of Israel, and my work in the Senate will reflect that. I'm supporting an advocate of a Jewish solution and a two-state solution. And I support President Obama's memorandum of understanding. That must have been some type of thing that he did in regards to Jews. But you already see that this man, now evidently he didn't come and tell these grassroots black people that was pulling levers for him in Georgia who he's going to be beholden to in the Senate. But he said it here to these Jewish folks that he's going to be beholden to him in the Senate.
I'm glad you found it, man. I'm glad you found it. I be damned, man. I can't say what I say, but I be damned. Okay, and I'm surprised they ain't had him to try to disavow the minister, man, Farrakhan. He stood up for Jeremiah Wright.
Well, okay, and that's one of the reasons why they brought him here before this Jewish Democratic Council of America, because they wanted him to disavow Jeremiah Wright. Well, listen, he pledged their support. He said, I'm going to do all I can. I'm going to be, what did he say here? This is his direct quote. I want the United States to play a strong role in assuring Israel's security. I look forward to working in the U.S. Senate as a Jewish leader. I thought this man was African-American. I thought he's supposed to be looking out for your interests. You're in Georgia. I didn't know you lived in Tel Aviv, Wes.
No, sir, man.
Okay.
Particularly on what they're doing in Israel to the real Ethiopians, Hebrews, sterilizing the women and all that stuff, man.
Yeah, well, damn, man. He said that.
I'm glad you found it, Eddie. I'm glad you found it. Y'all better than the real news, man. I love y'all, man. I'm glad you found it, man.
Talk to you later.
Damn. You made me cuss, man. I love y'all, man. I let somebody else talk, man. I'm speechless now, bro.
Talk to you. Peace. Richard, I don't know what's I'm telling you.
You know, as you read that, and I'm thinking, you know, January 1st, the continent of Africa created its free trade agreement, right, to be able to move goods across the continent. Now, you would think these black leaders somewhere, these political leaders would be providing support and helping assist, at least putting out the idea that this is a way to deal with the continent being able to strengthen itself. What I'm trying to get to is that you never hear any of these talk about they're the leader for a country on the continent, like you hear that they're a leader, they're a representative of a country in the Middle East called Israel. I never hear it.
I didn't know, Richard, that you can pledge your support to a quote-unquote foreign country and you You're supposed to represent. Black folks put him in that seat.
Right.
He got on TV talking about my 82-year-old grandmother who picked cotton, or his mother that was picking cotton for some. Come on. And then you're going to say that you're going to pledge your support. You're going to be a mouthpiece for Israel while you're in the Senate. He said that. That ain't me putting out some propaganda on them. He said that, according to these quotes out of a Jewish paper.
And then
who looks like the fool? Who looks like the fool? Go ahead, Richard.
The other one you said about him being, you know, like being able to kind of basically, I'm a representative of all the people.
Wow. Let's take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. There's a couple of calls that jumped on here, and we can do that. And you can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com. Abibitumi.tv. Abibitumi.tv.com. Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI, Black Power, ABIBITUMI, the only word you need to know to join your global Kometsu Black family, to join your interconnected Kometsu Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
In this crooked game of power politics here in America, the Negro, namely the race problem, integration, civil rights issue, are all nothing but tools used by the whites who call themselves liberals against another group of whites who call themselves conservatives, either to get into power or to retain power. Among whites here in America, The political teams are no longer divided into Democrats and Republicans. The whites who are now struggling for control of the American political throne are divided into liberal and conservative camps. The white liberals from both parties cross party lines to work together toward the same goal. And white conservatives from both parties do likewise. The white liberal differs from the white conservative only in one way. The liberal is more deceitful, more hypocritical than the conservative. Both want power, but the white liberal is the one who has perfected the art of posing as the Negro's friend and benefactor. And by winning the friendship and support of the Negro, the white liberal is able to use the Negro as a pawn or a weapon in this political football game that is constantly raging between the white liberals and the white conservatives. The American Negro is nothing but a political football.
Since the 60s, you will see nothing but betrayals by the petty bourgeois elements in our society. The African bourgeoisie is the most corrupt bourgeoisie in the world. In Africa, they seek luxury in the midst of mass suffering. There are more Mercedes in Africa than in any other continent in the world. In America, as soon as they arrive at a position based on the blood of the people, they snatch that position and run away from the people. But you must not think that they represent the people. They only represent their opportunistic self using the people every step of the way. So you must not be confused. The petty bourgeoisie everywhere will be running for cover, but the masses will spare them not. Consequently, we who have dedicated our lives to the people's struggle, we, who knowing that the people will always be free, we, understanding that we must make a contribution to qualify our struggle since the 60s, have been dedicating all our energies to only one task, the organization of the masses of our people. We are not running for mayor. We're not running for president. No changes can come from the top down. We're not stupid. Changes can only come from the bottom up. The masses and the masses alone can make them. If you want to learn something from the 60s, the lesson is simple. Organize the masses of the people. Thank you. Thank you very much.
An African, the death of my brother is also my death. Let me put this question to you again, because many foolish black middle classes and many foolish people who are eating well think that they can sit in America and watch this country destroy the African continents, and watch this country destroy African Caribbeans, and watch this country destroy Africans in Central and South America, and think that these same people who destroy Africans abroad will not be the same people who destroyed them in America. There are fools in this country who try to claim that they are not Africans, who claim that they do not see color, as if their not seeing color makes any difference in the world. Simply because you don't see color doesn't mean somebody does not see you as color. And that's the issue. And you think then that you can sit in this country while this same nation and these same people that you sleep with and marry and love and so forth can go out and destroy African people and not think those people do not see you as African. Even though you choose not to see yourself as African, you'd better think again. You're out of your minds and you're headed for death. You must understand that. Hide behind it. I'm an American. Ladies and gentlemen, the death and destruction of black people will follow those kind of abstractions.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 9:14 here in the city of Philadelphia, and we're in Freestyle Friday mode. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call. We'll talk about it you can do that by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Richard.
Yeah.
You know, before we go to, let me see if this call is available. Let's go to this call here. Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from? Caller, are you there?
Greetings, brothers. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Well, you know, this is Brother Maurice calling from New York City. I'm loving the show. I thank you, brothers, for the knowledge and the wisdom that y'all have been imparting to our people. I just wanted to jump in after listening to that young brother out in Ohio and then listening to you talk about, you know, Reverend Warnock. First, I just want to clarify, because I don't know how many people know when you said BDS, what that actually means. BDS means standing for boycott, divestment, and sanction, mm-hmm. that particular movement to divest out of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So all those brothers and sisters out there didn't know that. That's what they were talking about specifically. It's the same type of movement that people had when they wanted people to divest out of South Africa, which Israel was actually supporting or whatever, because they were getting nuclear technology from South Africa and oppressing our people down there. So, you know, we need to recognize that. I don't have a problem with Israel existing. I want them to exist in peace or whatever, and that's fine for me. But I have a problem when they are interfering in other countries and helping other countries to oppress the people in those countries. They need to recognize that, and they need to own up to that. The other thing that I was thinking about when Brother Richard was talking about Africa, or whatever, the only thing that the United States has ever done in terms of Africa is when they came up with that whole policy underneath President Clinton of AGOA. AGOA meaning the African Growth and Opportunity Act, which they said where they wanted to bring businesses and get natural resources and stuff out of Africa and stuff. And it's the same thing that they did how the World Bank functions in the Caribbean and other places. They go into these places, and I'll just give you a perfect example of one with one of these African countries where people are growing marijuana or whatever. But these people from outside came to grow marijuana, but the farmers that live there can't afford the license to grow marijuana to sell it. So all the people that's benefiting are coming from Britain, and they're coming from the United States, and even people coming from Australia. They're taking that crop from Africa and they're selling it for a profit, because the license, I remember, it was like $30,000. Now, you got people here in America that are working that can't afford $30,000. How do you think that's going to work on the continent of Africa? So, and this was underneath Clinton, and a sister actually helped to create this thing, this AGOA Act or whatever. So going back to what the young brother said out there pertaining to the idea of taxes and the idea of President Trump, and is there any difference between the two parties, and they don't go down the same line. And it was interesting when he got into the issue of taxes or whatever. And this is where when he talked about mass media, I wondered to myself, did he understand that media has a way of projecting situations? Trump has went bankrupt 6 or 7 times. How is he considered to be successful? He talked about revenue. Well, Trump didn't pay taxes. Okay. Trump. So you're talking about this particular person, this narrative. You talk about these people, right, who run these Fortune 500 companies or whatever, who take their money, and because of the loopholes in the law, they take their money to the Caribbean or the Cayman Islands, or they take it to Ireland, these businesses or whatever, or because there's a loophole in the tax code that says that a company can take whatever their profits are, and if you have an office at a particular place, like in another country, you can say that the profit came from that area, and therefore it takes the profit that they made in the United States, and they put it into a country where there is no tax code or whatever, or the taxes are lower, so they don't have to pay taxes. Microsoft, Google, all of these places you're talking about. So when you talk about this whole philosophy of capitalism and all that, understand what you're talking about, right? Because when you talk about the people, the taxes being raised and all that type of stuff, it's not companies paying it. It's me and you, the one that are paying the high taxes or whatever, to provide those services that we desperately need. So this whole idea that, you know, and when they do say conservatism, they're right, because they're conserving what they got and keeping it from you, because they've done studies. They just came out with a study just recently that was published. I can't remember the name of it, which studied trickle-down economics. I want that young brother to listen. It studied it from the point that Reagan talked about it to now, and it said it failed. So all of these policies that you're talking about or whatever never helped the individual. And all of these people running around here talking about this idea of socialism and just so ignorant to me, because guess what? Social Security, Medicare, where the hell did you think those things came from? Those are socialist ideas. Social meaning us, social people, not no communist damn system. You know, so another thing I want to say, you brothers was on point. I'm sorry, I'm going a little tirade. You got to forgive me. You got to forgive me.
It's open forum.
You know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I said it's open forum. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the thing that got me when you were talking about this whole situation pertaining to these, what happened with that police officer being killed in Washington, D.C. due to this crisis, right? This is the thing I find very interesting. Where have you heard anything from the police union?
I know it.
The police unions, majority, all of them, right, that's the supported who? The endorsed who? Endorsed and supported Trump, and one of their own got killed, and you don't hear a word from them.
Yeah, you know what? I didn't even think about it from that point. Yeah, but you're right. Yeah, exactly.
Where are they at? And so I thought about it when I listened to them talking about Jacob Blake, and they saying the day before this whole thing happened in Washington, D.C., how because he acknowledged that he had a knife in his hand, that they were justified in shooting him. And then I watch on TV and seeing people running with nooses and taking police shields away from people and all types of weapons and stuff. And you got people running around there with pipe bombs and not a shot fired. Well, oh, excuse me, one shot. One shot fired, and that major from the army, okay, got killed. And then you see how they tried to lionize them. You see how this mass media is trying to make heroes out of these people and these individuals and stuff. And it goes back to the narrative, or whatever. They always are trying to reshape it because we look foolish in around the world. If you watch TV and you watch through the Russian, you watch any of the European television and stuff like that, they're laughing. They're laughing in Russia. The Chinese said, this is the thing I thought was interesting. This is what the Chinese did, right? The Chinese came out and said, how dare y'all say anything about Tiananmen Square or what's going on in Hong Kong and stuff like that? You know what the Chinese did? After they said that, they went out and arrested all of these other so-called democracy promoters or whatever in Hong Kong. Went out and just arrested a whole bunch of people and said America is hypocritical. So this is not about arresting and finding these people because it's the right thing to do. This is about trying to save face in the world.
Save face, yes. Yep.
Okay, I've said enough already, brother, so I'm going to get off now, but thank you.
Hey, Maurice, thank you for your contribution, man.
Oh, yeah. One other thing, brother, real quick. I sent it to you, Elliot, and I'm sorry I got it to you late. Just one more thing. I apologize. This brother just sent me an article from the New York Times that I really want to see what y'all think about this. It said we need a second great migration, and his philosophy is that black power lies with us leaving the north and going back south or whatever. I just sent you the article. I just got it maybe an hour ago and stuff. I don't know the guy's name, Charles M. Blow or something like that. I don't know him.
I think I've seen it. I didn't read it totally, but I did see it.
Yeah. I don't know. So I don't know what your brothers think about that. I was going to ask you, do you think that makes sense, that if we, because of what happened with Warnock and all these people in the South, this whole idea of electing a Jewish person and a black person from the state of Georgia, that we've demonstrated black power, and that maybe we need to leave these northern states and go back south? Now I'm going to get off. Thank you, brothers.
One thing that I did were trying to do and trying to address that was look at, you know, like who is right now, who's migrating, you know? And I think I pulled up the, you know, because I wanted to see, you know, the economic, what is the economic engine that is fulfilling this migration? And it seems like a lot of young, skilled people are migrating to those counties. And you see they're focused in these, I think it was four or five different particular counties in Georgia. That is being, and it's a certain skill base. But I also seen that amongst blacks that the unemployment rate was high. So the migration part, yes, for me, it's just that it has to be a structural migration, because we still have to deal with the systemic problems that we have. And unless there's some industries that is going to be able to employ, then we'll just still have a lot of people and focused in a lot of areas. And definitely what we talk about might happen to countries where they move in, but they take over the whatever economic activity that's going on from the people who have already been there. That's one challenge about the migration, if it's not planned. Again, I think the Art Republic of New Africa and those earlier in the 60s, 70s had pushed for taking over five states. So that is a migration plan, but it was to be a systemic process. And the other thing I thought was interesting in seeing the election, you see all those red areas in Georgia compared to the blue areas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what is happening is that the population density of black people, which is true, I think they were able to get out the vote, but the population density is in concentrated areas.
Yeah, centralized, yep.
But who is controlling the land mass? So that has to be taken in consideration and when we're talking about, looking at one state, Georgia being at state particular and doing that. And so it's a mixed bag to me if it's just a migration, you know, with aspiration, but not a programmatic migration to actually take control over industry and develop. And I don't know at this point right now, if, you know, I haven't seen the numbers yet to say what type of migration that is, other than it's younger people, certain skill level, who have the ability to be able to move into this, at least the technological jobs.
And listen, Richard, Maurice, you still there, right?
Yes, sir.
You know, and a couple of years ago, and I know you remember, Richard, we had James Lance Taylor on. and we was talking about this exact subject about our people being forced out of these cities through gentrification, and a lot of them was moving back down south.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a need for a political strategy to be developed because they could take political control of the areas that they lived in. But being that a lot of the places didn't have a strategy, other people formulated a strategy for them and is using them now. Almost like what Malcolm said in that clip I played, as a political football. Abrams ran out there and enlisted all of those people and all of those areas that we're talking about, Richard. Those people ain't necessarily no up-and-coming black professionals.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these people have been gentrified out of these cities, Chicago, Philadelphia, all these other cities, and Cleveland, and then went back south. And she went out there and organized and registered all the people to put those people in office and to put Biden in office. Because it was no political strategy developed for some of those rural outlying areas where they could take control of the economy of those areas. And if we don't develop a political strategy, these other people are going to develop one for us and use us as a political football. So I just wanted to throw that out there in relation to what you had mentioned.
Last thing, I always keep saying last thing, right? I'm sorry. I was thinking about that statement that you read in a Jewish newspaper, and I said to myself, imagine if you replace that with reparations. Imagine if you replace that with Black Americans and stuff. And I'm going to be a senator for Black America.
I know.
And I'm going to push for reparations.
Now, what's wrong with that? Maurice, what's wrong with them saying that? Why do they always have to get in these offices and say, oh, I'm going to work for everybody and all this type of stuff? When everybody ain't catching hell here.
Well, you know, the thing was interesting. I was listening to these analysts, so-called analysts on TV, and they were talking about, well, Wanda can't do but so much because he has to run for office in another 2 years. Because remember, this was a replacing of somebody that resigned from office or whatever. And taking over his seat. So it's only 2 years left. So now we have to be politically careful. You know, it makes me go back to thinking about what you said with W.E.B. Du Bois when he talked about why he didn't vote. Because the promise of voting has always been held like a carrot in front of us. And as soon as we reach for it, they raise it a little bit higher and a little bit higher. And it's not, and it's now, it went from your mama's generation to my child's generation and stuff. And how many times are they going to raise the carrot up saying that if you do A, B, and C, this idea of you being included is going to come to fruition? And you see that these white people are running crazy attacking the Capitol because they feel that they have lost something that black people have never had.
Maurice, thank you for your contribution, man. Still there? Oh, he's gone. Richard, before we go to our next call, it's something funny that I noticed when the white folks was running around the Capitol and running around Washington with all this mayhem and whatever they were doing, that when black folks had righteous indignation in these cities because of what was going on, whether it was joblessness, police gunning innocent people down, or whatever was going on, and they had righteous indignation in a lot of these areas, you had black politicians, mm-hmm. black ministers coming out there admonishing the people, telling them to stop, you're making us look bad, you're tearing up your own community and all this other stuff. I didn't see, where was the white politicians? And if you notice, the white politicians just said something about it. They were saying something in reference to, just like Marie said, the embarrassment of the whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
They wasn't saying anything. Yeah, they wasn't saying anything to necessarily admonish their brethren and telling them to stop. And I definitely didn't see no white ministers. Where were they out there telling their own brethren to stop this? I didn't see any of them. None of them. And there's plenty of big white ministers out there. I didn't see them. But anytime something happened in these cities White folks encourage, not to encourage, they tell black leadership and black ministers to get out there and tell their people to stop. And they do it. But when the script is flipped, I didn't see them out there telling their people to stop doing that. In fact, just like you said, they're going to do all they can to help appease those people. And you know one of the ways they're going to do it that I can think of right off the bat, Richard?
Exactly.
Is with this, and Biden said it when he admonished those black elected officials about defunding the police. They don't, right. They're not going to defund the police. They're not. And if you remember, a lot of his support, this idiot Trump said a lot of his support was from the police unions.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they was letting people run all in that place. So that's one of the ways that he's going to appease that so-called conservative wing. They're not going to fund the police. They're going to let them know they support them. But they're going to also talk out of both sides of their mouth when they're dealing with black folks. Just like he got up there with that disingenuous speech. Biden talking about some, oh, black, if it was Black Lives Matter, it wouldn't have been that response. Oh, wow. I mean, you telling me something I don't know. But that's only to appease you. But when the chips fall down and they got to vote on monies in those Senate and Congress, the monies are still going to go to these police departments because the killings of black folks didn't stop. In December, you had several black people that was gunned down, innocent black people gunned down in these cities. It ain't stopped. The protests stopped. White folks ain't been out there screaming, George Floyd, and running up and down the street. That stopped, but the killings haven't stopped.
Right. And they get more and more they just as blatant, and even the media isn't really promoting it in the same manner. No.
Let's take a couple more of these calls. Let's go to 602. 602?
Yes, good brothers.
How are you, sir?
Happy New Year. I'm doing great, good brothers. Great. Well, I have a different take on it, you know. I think what I think now is going to happen, I think this is going to motivate black people even more now to get out of this place.
Well, let's see.
I think you're going to see that because I think what we saw there on TV shocked a lot of black people. That really shook a lot of our people to the core. And I hear in more and more black people say, you know what, I think we have to have an alternative to this place. Because, you see, if they had succeeded with what they did there the other day, that made everything crash. Okay? Everything. The U.S. currency is no more. Okay? Because once the government falls, the currency falls too. See, everything fall, God, you know. So this is a dangerous situation. Very, very dangerous we're seeing here. So as I said, when all else fail to organize the people, conditions will. Because remember, you know, a lot of people get food stamp. Who they get food stamp from? The government. If the government crash, they starve. So this is serious. This is serious, serious. And these people ain't finished. It ain't over. This is just the beginning.
As soon as I leave, I'll be with you.
Yeah, it ain't over. You see? Them people ain't just going to go home and sit down there. You see? So, we better take heed. You know, 2021 started out like a hot pocket, I'm telling you.
Can I ask you a question? I know you follow the continent. What do you think about this continental free trade agreement? Do you think that it will benefit the people in the continent compared to foreign countries like the United States, Europe, and China, and the African bureaucrats?
I think it all depends on how we here in the West African people here in the diaspora take advantage of that. Take advantage of those free trade agreements, because we have the capital here, we have the technological resources. So if we get involved, we can see a boost. But the question is, you know, again, you know, are we going to get involved? Are we going to watching what's going on with, you know, watching the social fabric of this country fall apart, you know, in front of our face? You know, we may have a little time to gather our resources here and go and be a part of that free trade agreement. You see, because we are in the best position to help Africa move up. We have the tools at our disposal. They have the natural resources on the continent. They have the labor force. It is time to us to marry. And it is happening. I see it happening. You know, it's not going to be in the mainstream media, but it's happening. You know, people are doing it. You know, the good ambassador, she has her thing. She's doing other organizations out there are doing things. You know, so that is the future for us. It is the motherland and us tying up, figuring out some way we can organize ourselves together. You know, organize our economic resource. You know, the magic of numbers. You know, if you have 50,000 people contributing 25 cents a day for 100 days, that's $1.25 million. 50,000 people now, you know, contribute. So, you know, we have to, I think we need systems, you know, we have to get systems in place, you know, to help us organize our economic base, that we can use that money to move things collectively and all our people can benefit. So we need our economists, our, you know, the brain, the money people, to put those systems in place that we can donate or whatever to do it. We have to. We have no choice. It is a do-or-die situation now, because we see this place is collapsing. It's happening right in front of our face. We see it. We're seeing it happening. So we have to make preparations for ourselves, because here we're totally cut off. We don't have no... And, you know, and we're not organized. So, you know, we totally disjointed. So we got to get our act together quick, fast, and in a hurry. But if we use the skills, as I said, we can take advantage of that. That's a big benefit for us. But we have to step out into the world and make that move.
I agree.
Yeah, and you know, if I may string, you know, just in talk, you know, just imagine, Elliot, what you were saying as far as having a plan, right? This migration, you know, having a plan, say even into the state of Georgia, and in that plan, in that strategy, they were moving, and since Abram, with the name Stacey Abram, is going to be the political muscle in that state, utilizing based off of that black vote. And they had a international trade relationship established, as brother said, you know, with the continent that would be, that would create the engine mechanism of economic development and trade between the two. I mean, moving in the state so you could be able to produce the either the capital formation or even you know, some other kind of service that would be a part of supporting a country that would be moving goods through, that could be now moving goods through the continent. What kind of economic benefit that would be to both sides? That is when migration, utilizing your political, territorial sovereignty and muscle, and your international relationship to the continent can be beneficial and be directed to you know, black folks better. Now, I'm just taught to do that out of the top of my head, but
they're not going to do that.
You're not.
Yeah, they're not going to do that. Yeah. They're not going to do that. Stacey Abrams and people only are going to do that.
They're not going to do that.
I read where that preacher said, you know, when he read what the preacher said, I was shocked. But again, he's a preacher. So, you know, again, you know, Jews are the chosen. They're the chosen of God. How dare you say that about, you know? So, again, what is it's shocking, a Jewish man and a black man, you know? So I don't know what the hell is going on. Them rednecks down there in charge, they red now, I'm telling you. So, you know, anyway, let us keep on keeping on, and thank you for your program, good brothers. Keep on keeping on. Thank you.
Thank you for your contribution.
All right.
Yeah, Richard, that's a good idea, because it's going to take that type of organization.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to do that, because they already committed their allegiance to Israel, to the United States, God bless America, to other foreign entities, European, and that's not in their interest to develop a power base among you.
Mm.
So they're not going to do that. If we're going to wait for them to try to organize something like Brother Marcus is talking about, we're going to be waiting and our people are going to be in the same situation. It's going to have to take a grassroots effort to do that, and it can be done.
Right.
And in fact, it's being done now, but it's not a unified effort. It's going to take a unified effort, and we got the fund, we got the organization to do it. I mean, black people raise billions of dollars with the African American church. Those things, that same type of money organization, and the collecting of money can still be done, but in other areas. We just can't be utilizing money to build bigger edifices so people can holler and scream on Sunday. It ain't necessarily about that.
And for those, in my opinion, you know, again, talking out of my head, for those who are mobilizing, organizing around reparations, that kind of, like, if we're going to, when we talk about resources, this is where you utilize your vote, you know, and direct it to something that will build your effort, that has a wealth building and legacy building capacity, compared to waiting for them. They're going to give you a couple hundred million here or waiting for a check there, you know. You know, if you're going to, and like y'all said, you know, now you got a person using Georgia. You supposed to got down that because they celebrating, say, Stacey Abrams. You got a Democratic political powerhouse in the Democratic Party in the state of Georgia, and you got a senator, and you can't. And you can't organize a larger scale economic formation development that has a natural linkages to continental trade, where it's in its infancy, in order to serve as both interests. As y'all say, I mean, if they ain't thinking like that. You know, does this go back to where we started in that this is our capital and, you know, and they going to kill us? I mean, both of them are defeatists. There's no consciousness of victory in those two positions. I just, you know, it just makes no sense to me.
Hold on a second. I was trying to check some out. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to 215. 215.
Hey, good evening, Brother Ellen, Brother Richard. How y'all doing tonight?
No worries, sir.
I'm doing fine. Our praises be to Allah. I don't know where to begin, brother. It's just a good count, Brother West, of course, Brother Maurice, Brother Marcus. I mean, just good conversation. I like Brother West had me laugh when he said those white devil presidents. I had to laugh. Brother West, he's a character, man. He's a character. And I happen to agree with him on that, too. But I'm going to deal with Israel and all that, too. I'm going to tie everything kind of together, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, Reverend Warnock and his, you know, well, Lord, I don't even know where to begin with that. But on a... When Brother Maurice was talking about Social Security, he hit the nail on the head, because I have often said this, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, on terrestrial radio to some of the hosts that may don't know the history of Social Security. Like you said, it's a socialism type thing because, you know, back when President Franklin Roosevelt, you know, created Social Security, and keep in mind, he didn't create it for black people's benefit, because at that time, as you know, a lot of black people didn't have a Social Security number. They wouldn't make earning a living in terms where they could get a paycheck and have a W-2. So it was delayed, especially black domestic workers. They weren't even, you know, they was just getting paid under the table and getting paid a small smidgen at that by their white, you know, benefactors. So black people didn't benefit from Social Security until later on. Now that being said, you know, it just shows you the ignorance of some white people, many white people, especially the Trump supporters, and I'm sure a lot of them that went up to Washington, they was, you know, getting Social Security, which Trump been threatening to get rid of if he had a chance. Because my point is that when Franklin Roosevelt first did it back then in 1933, you had ignorant white people, especially white Republicans, and some white Democrats, but mainly white Republicans, they was against it. They screamed, because Brother Wayne sent me articles from back in the papers during that time where you had ignorant white people, Republicans, saying, well, if you get this Social Security, this is a welfare handout. It's socialism. I mean, they were saying all kind of crazy stuff. And if anybody ever worked for a living, when you look at your pay stub, you say take out for Social Security taxes. It's not like they give you, you paying for that. You're paying into the system. And many people, and Brother Wayne, who's an ancestor now, he used to tell me all the time, he said, Brother Joe, were not for Social Security, I don't know how we'll be living right now because you know, he remember you had the Enron scandal, Brother Elliot, with Bush, the Enron thing where a lot of people lost money, no fault of their own, through their pensions or investments. Mm-hmm. That was employer. Well, Brett Wayne's job, because like I said, he had some jobs now, and like some jobs then, you have a say so how you can, you know, once your money invested, you know, you have a say so. But see, at that time, Wayne didn't have it. His money was automatically, you know, dealt with by his employer. So he was dealing with Enron. So Wayne lost several thousand dollars. From his 401k or 403b, whatever like that, or SIPA IRA, or, you know, whatever type of investment plan he had. And he had that, and that's why he had to work a couple extra years just so he could kind of like, you know, have a standard of living after he finally, you know, left the workforce. But my point is that he said, well, not for Social Security, he don't know how he will live. And that's pretty much the situation for most people in this country, be they black, white, whatever. Social Security is keeping them from pretty much living out in the street and everything. So you heard these ignoramuses is coming, so, you know, Social Security, this is, you know, this and that, you know, and you got people like Mitch McConnell, though, if he never got Social Security, he would be okay because he's a rich white man. So it don't mean nothing to him one way or another, you know what I mean? But he'll still collect his Social Security check when he leaves the Senate. He's probably getting it now because he's of age to get it now. He's probably getting it now for all we know. But my point is that, you know, it was because of things like union, Social Security, work rules, labor, the labor force and stuff, the good labor laws, all those came from a form of socialism. And these ignorant white folks that run behind these Republicans like Trump and all them, they ones were not for that. Some of them biggest be living in the street, and half of them still living poor. And that's to show how sick some of those white people that was running after Trump up there in D.C., Ellen, Richard, they from places like Kentucky, Mitch McConnell's home state. Some of those white folks are so backwards, Ellen and Richard, and from West Virginia, the Yahoos. Here in 2021, I'm not talking about 1921, I'm talking about 2021, some of those white folks live in rural Kentucky and rural West Virginia and stuff, they still using outhouses, Ellie and Richard, to go to the bathroom, man. They don't even, some of them so poor, but they're not poor like P-O-O-R, they poor, P-O-R. It's one O in the poor. And they so racism, they still think that they better than black folks because their whiteness gives them some kind of a, they think their whiteness gives them some kind of advantage, but they so ignorant and stuff, they so backwards, they don't, like I said, they don't have decent bathroom facilities and stuff, they still using the damn outhouse to go to the bathroom. From, man, I mean, how sick is that here in 2021? And I'm the same ones that want to work in the coal mines, want the coal industry to come back, which is never gonna come back like it when Trump lied to them and said gonna bring it back. And that's why the ones that have their relatives died at an early age because they got black lung, you know what I'm saying, from working on those dirty coal mines. You know, I mean, you know, and the thing is, Ellie Mitchell, you're not going to change that mindset. And that was the crowd that you seen up there in D.C. The other day. You're not going to hurt black
people. Well, I don't listen. And let me just say this, and you can continue your thought. Don't get it twisted that his base is some poor whites from Kentucky that don't have no shoes in an outhouse. They might be part of his constituents. His base is some of these people you see every day that work jobs or that might have that might be in these offices. That's his base. Those people might be part of his constituents, but his base is not those police unions and all. Those people ain't no poor Kentuckians with no shoes in an outhouse.
I'm sure to clarify my comments, boy, but I definitely agree with it. I didn't clarify it well enough. But you're right, Ellen. I don't disagree with that. You're right.
Go ahead and finish your thought. I just want to throw that in there.
No, I'm glad you did, because you're absolutely right and stuff, you know. But it just shows you the mentality of these people. And see, when get me, Ellen and Richard, when I listen to terrestrial radio station, and I'm hearing Negroes on these stations, oh, these white folks, these Trump, it was an attack on our capital. Our capital. It's an attack on our democracy. Like, are you kidding me? I mean, we as black folks, but we just don't learn, man. Why would you sit there like you and Brother West said, I wouldn't give a damn if they would have burnt the whole damn thing down. You know what I mean? You know, I'm going to quote Warren Sapp. Remember Warren Sapp, the great defensive end from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who's a Hall of Famer now? You remember when they played the Eagles here in Philadelphia, and I think it was that last game, when they imploded Vet Stadium. Remember, Elliot, when they imploded Vet Stadium, it was the last game. I remember Warren Sapp told the reporter, he said, well, how you feel, Warren? Y'all beat the Eagles in the NFC title game for y'all right to get to the Super Bowl, and which they ultimately won that year. He said, how you feel being the last team to play at the Vet? And Warren Sapp said, in typical Warren Sapp fashion, he said, I don't care if they blow the bitch up. And, of course, they imploded it, a month or whatever later before they built the new stadium. So I felt the same about the Capitol. I could care less about that place, man. But I heard black folks on terrestrial radio, oh, man, this was an attack on our capital, our democracy, as if you count. They don't, like you mean something to these people. They shooting your people down the street, and you talking about some our capital. And them bigots that's up there in that capital making laws, the Congress and the Senate, those racist rednecks, they making laws supporting the police killing you and everything like that, you know, and you talking about something that's our capital, our democracy. Man, I tell you, sometimes, makes your head spin around sometimes, man. And Reverend Warnock, this Negro, again, I'm not surprised because, like Brother Marcus so skillfully said, many of these black men, and I don't know whether Warnock's, I take it as an intelligent man, so I'm not going to give him no benefit of the doubt. No, I'm not going to give him no break, because as I said many times on this radio, Ellen Richard, see, a lot of our people that look at these so-called white Jews who are Agonazi Jews as God's chosen people, they do it from a position of ignorance. They don't know no better, because they get beat over the head and indoctrinated by these pork chop, whatever Brother Jay calls them, eating menaces, and they put that stuff in their head about these white folks are the chosen people of God. So they operate out of a position of ignorance. Why you think over the last several years before COVID-19, you had a group of these pork chop eating, chicken eating menaces was taking our black children over to Israel, indoctrinating them to that nonsense that these are some God's chosen people. So, but in Reverend Warnock's case, I'm not going to give him that because he's an intelligent man. He's not stupid. But see, he's going right along with that foolishness because he wants to be accepted by these people. And Brother Elliot and Richard, this is cool. This is deep. Notice what you just said when you was talking to Brother when you and Richard was talking to Brother Maurice about that. Now, this Negro got elected by black people. Tell me where I'm wrong at. Am I right so far?
Yeah, that's who put him there. Yeah.
Black folks in Georgia put this fool in the White in the Senate, right? He's a senator elect, and like the brother said, he's gonna serve with 2-year term, and then he can run for the full, I guess, 6-year term after that. Now, black folks put them in office. They go back to what Malcolm said. We put them first, they put us last. Black folks, Stacey Abrams was knocking on doors. Now, again, I got issues with Stacey Abrams, as you well know, but you have to give her credit in the sense she organized good. She practically went door to door organizing these black people. It's a shame that she's not more of a conscious sister, but she did a hell of a job. Even her white adversaries had to admit that on conservative media, that she outdid the white folks on the Republican side. I mean, she practically went door to door. So she got black folks, you know, like you said, black folks that came maybe from, that was gentrified out of Chicago, Philly, wherever, they down in Georgia now, to vote for Reverend Warnock because they spoke to him as somebody that can do for black people. Now, this Negro hasn't even took office yet, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, and already he's saying he's going to be a mouthpiece for Israel. And I got to ask you this. Again, did you not say that Warnock said out of his mouth, I'm going to be like a Jewish leader in Congress?
Well, that's what he said.
Say again, Elliot?
That's what he said.
Right, that's what I'm saying. He said he's going to be, and I'm sitting there and stuff. I thought he was a black man.
He said, you know? This is his comment, and quote out of this Jewish post. He said, I want the United States to play a strong role in ensuring Israel's security as a homeland for Jewish people. I look forward to working in the U.S. Senate as a Jewish leader to promote strong American diplomacy.
And see, again, brother, and see, black folks got to get that. Any intelligence, any brains should challenge that. They should raise holy hell up and stuff and hold them accountable for that.
Well, if you don't see the Jewish Post or you don't do your research on some of these people, then you don't know it. So yeah, our people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. It's not just because our people are stupid.
You're absolutely right.
They just don't have
the
proper knowledge.
Exactly.
And some of these shows that they listen to don't mention those things.
That's true. That is true. Because, I mean, that's a scathing indictment. They hear black folks put you in office, but you're going to work for the Zionists. And I ain't going to say no Jews. You're going to work for the racist Zionists who are oppressed out people who, like Brother Marie said, was given weapons to South Africa to kill our people. When you look at all those massacres over in South Africa, you look at Sharpeville, Johannesburg, Soweto. Who the hell do you think gave Israel those weapons? I mean, gave South Africa those weapons? Was Israel. I mean, there's no secret. It's common knowledge, you know. And you tell us when you're going to work for them. I mean, but see, again, Ellie, you ain't going to get no pushback from this black misleadership class because they are stock and barrel with them. Why do you think Cynthia McKinney, another sister who's a native of Georgia, why do you think she was ran out of Congress? Because she had the courage to stand up and was not going to be a mouthpiece for the Zionist state of Israel. And that's why they ganged up on her and got her the hell out. They did redistricting. They did all kinds of stuff to make sure she got out of that Congress because she was a strong, independent, strong black woman. And do you look at a guy like Reverend Warnock, who's a disgrace, man? I mean, he didn't even took office yet, and he already letting you know he planned his hand what he's going to be. You know, I mean, and you wonder why, and I close with these last couple of comments. It's no wonder why black folks in this country can't get nowhere economically, socially, educationally, because you got your black leaders. It's not just Warnock on the Senate level, because you got ones in there already, like the Cory Bookers of the world, who've been pledged their allegiance to Israel. You got state senators here in Pennsylvania, like Hardy Williams, who done pledged their support for Israel. You got ones on the local leaders the same way, the Dow Clarks of the world, who have pledged their support for Israel. And here their own people catching hell, living in subpar housing. Their children are going to subpar schools. They in food deserts, and they work with some damn white Zionists that millions of thousand miles away overseas. You got to be kidding me, man! While your own damn people suffering around you. I mean, it's insulting, man. I'm just going to be straight. It's insulting, and it's sad, like you said, that our people don't get this information because, like you said, we suffer from lack of knowledge. We destroyed from lack of knowledge. Because I do believe, Elliot, that the majority of our people, except for the ones that's blind and ignorant, they're going to still act stupid. But I think the majority of our people, even the ones down in Georgia that support Warnock, if they heard his comments, they voted for him, that's conscious, they would be outraged, Elliot. I really believe they would be outraged. They'd be ready to run that nigga out of the state of Georgia if they had to hear his comments, man. I really believe that, you know?
Yeah, well.
I mean, that's the way I felt, because I think we had a group of conscious black folks that just not, you know, this tired of this nonsense. And so you heard Dwight Evans' head full up with that nonsense, and I say these things like, and I'm off. You remember him when y'all put up his comments a couple years ago? I'm about a two-state solution for that. I got a bill in Congress that's pending for the Palestinian children. You heard anything else about that bill, Elliot?
Yeah, well, that's their talking points, because if you notice, Warnock said the same thing in this article I read, that he's about a two-state solution. So any of these blacks that's in office, if you question them in reference to their support for Israel, that's their answer. The same thing.
Of course.
All of them say, you can almost put a tape in and just push the button, and they say the same response.
Well, I'll say this and stuff. I bet you and Richard a bag of donuts and stuff that Warnock, these Jews, they don't let you get down easy. And for Warnock to win their approval, I guarantee you, Brother Elliot, within his first year in office or first few months, he's gonna come out and denounce Minister Louis Farrakhan. Guarantee you. Because they ain't worried about him denouncing Reverend Wright. I mean that's fine if he does that too, which he hasn't yet. But they could care less. They want him to denounce the minister in a true Negro handkerchief head, Negro boot looking form. He will do it. So don't be surprised. You heard from Brother Joe on the night of January the 8th. So he comes out in his first few months in office and denounced Minister Farrakhan as an anti-Semite and all that stuff. Don't be surprised, because he's getting his marching orders right now. And that's how they roll. That's the litmus test, as the ministers say. In order for you to win them Zionist approval, you got to throw the minister under the bus. Why you think Keith Ellison did it and all the rest? And Keith Ellison did it, and he didn't get nothing for it. Oh, he's an attorney general now in Minnesota, but he wanted to be the head of the Democrat Party. He did all that bootlicking and didn't get what he really wanted. So. But again, you'll see Warnock. He'll denounce the minister, because again, he want to please these Zionists and be their boy. So he gonna do just what a good Negro do. He will denounce the minister. So when it happens and stuff, remember that Brother Joe told Joe and Richard this back on January the 8th of 2021. Well, thanks, Ellen, Richard, for your time. If you can put me on mute, Brother Elliot, I'll listen to the rest of the show. But good cause tonight. Good information, Elliot. Good information, man.
Tell to you.
Thanks, Elliot.
Let's go to Newport News. Newport News, you there? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I said I couldn't get free to comment, but I've been listening. Powerful show, man.
All right. You can throw something in the mix there, Brother Otis.
No, because I have actually a real world one going. Why yours is going?
Okay, all right. Talk to you soon. Let's take a brief break, let's take this call because the time is closing in. Let's go to 646.
What's going on with you then, Elliot? Man, what a fine day in the neighborhood it was on Wednesday. What could be better? Could be better than white folks acting like themselves and showing the world that they should never be able to talk about democracy in this country again. It reminded me of, as one would say, Venezuela or some other third world country, of white folks acting like white folks naturally do.
Yeah, that he had a nerve to make those comments talking about the who said that? I think it was Bush. Bush said that.
I wouldn't give a damn who said
this,
it.
This looked like a banana republic. Go ahead.
They did it. They showed themselves to be the banana republic that they are, with ignorant white folks that couldn't even do the effing job right. That didn't even understand clearly what they were doing. Who following a complete jackass that now gonna place themselves in a position of doing jail time and suffering the consequences while that filthy, stinking, no good cracker, all he did was just laugh at him and get off. It was a masturbation session to him. Because the bottom line is now, as you can see, that it's been ratified. They done banned him on Twitter. They done banned him on Facebook. They done basically banned him everywhere to keep his cracker behind in a certain degree of check. And it's just a joke, man. It's just a joke. And all you can do is just shake your head, man. That's all you can do is just shake your head. Because it just seems that something is really, really fundamentally wrong with our people and how we look at the optics of what go on in this effing country. You know, like Little Joe said a minute ago, our country. This ain't my country. I don't give a damn about this country. I could care less. They basically show America and the world that if it was, as one my brother would say, the niggas, there would have been some shooting, some tear gas, some beating, just an on and on popping session of beating some heads like back in the day. But then you had employees supposedly of the government helping these individuals do what they doing. Now, we don't even know how true this really is, because think about it. You saw all sorts of things happening, like windows being kicked out and all of this. Come on, man. Let's think about this. You really think all of those windows there ain't really reinforced? There's a lot more to this than really meet the eye. You know what I mean? Now they talking about impeaching this dirt bag again. I mean, it's just a joke. Now, you know, Little Joe said something that I had to laugh at and I had to think about. And I'm just going to show all of y'all, I want y'all to remember this name. I want everybody listening to me to remember this name, Joe Manchin. Joe Manchin done already said that $2,000 for the people of America may not be the thing to do. He done already said it. So that means that he ain't really on board to make it do what it do for the people. You see, and let's be very, very clear. Ain't nobody told him that we gonna keep your devil behind in check and that you better handle your business the right way. Nah. So every time something progressive happened in this country, watch that one bastard there cause the problem and get away with it. Now, as far as Warnock go, let's put Warnock in a nutshell. The Negro got 2 years to get his friends paid, to get himself paid, in the hope that he could get reelected. Now, when it's all said and done, in 2 years, let's see if his community is better or if the state of Georgia is better. Now, the amazing thing is that here it is, a black woman is now the darling of America, a mammy, a lesbian, a absolute carpet muncher, whatever you want to refer to, an organizer, a sister, whatever, Stacey Abrams, or whatever her name is now the head mammy in charge. That black woman there got more of an influence in this country than who Little Joe was talking about was going to be denounced, Minister Farrakhan. She got more of an influence than Minister Farrakhan do. So Little Joe, they're not going to talk about Farrakhan. They ain't paying Farrakhan no mind. You know what I mean? But just the thing. Here it is. They now have supposedly, now listen to the word clearly, supposedly control of the city. But here it is. A white man from West Virginia has the real power in regards to the Senate and what moves forward. And he done already said it. Then you got a white man who come behind him on TV who's the facilitator and an overseer on his own right, say that if people want the $2,000, maybe they should get vaccinated. That's what he should do. Chris Hayes said on TV that to get the $2,000, you should get vaccinated. Now, I don't get it, so I could give less than an F. But if I was to get it, I still wouldn't take no shot. Now, Brother Elliot, I want to take my hat off to you, man. I really, really do. These last two Sundays that you have presented to our people has been absolutely phenomenal, brother. I just really want to stand up, give you a standing ovation, clap for you, and say, hey, brother, thank you. Because you have put forward some information that kind of reacts to numbnuts that we have in our community that talk about we should take a vaccination. A vaccination that basically is something that has been created in a 9-month period of time when history has shown us that most vaccinations take many, many years to be able to be given to the public. Oh, Lord have mercy. Lord have mercy. I want to thank you, Elliot and Richard, for doing black people a real service. And you know what the sad, sick thing is? Black folks don't even appreciate it. But I want to thank you. And I know people that's listening now want to thank you for your leadership and the direction that you're trying to help our people. I take my hat off to you, brother, and the ancestors will definitely bless you.
Well, it's just sharing the information. But, you know, let me, being that you mentioned that, I want to play something for the listening audience because I did notice on, I just want to play something for the listening audience. It was, we did that program on the, let me get this date straight, Richard. We did it on the 27th of December with Dr. Aleem Muhammad. On the 31st a few days later, they had Dr. Marilyn Coulter on the terrestrial station here in Philadelphia. For those who don't know, Marilyn Coulter is the chief of staff at United Medical Center in Washington, D.C., and the adjunct faculty at Howard University Medical Center. She's a very big doctor in Washington. She was on the terrestrial station here in the city of Philadelphia talking about taking the vaccine and that she has taken it. But I want you to hear some comments, the comment that she made. It's a 2-minute clip about what she said, if I can get it up here while you're still on with us, Jay.
Out. Interferons, if I may. Let me
please
tell you, I am
so talk about interferon. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, interferons. I first of all, I'm blessed to be able to be alert and cognitive and all of this, you know, each day with this, all of this COVID. But I have a dear friend of mine, and we talked about him yesterday, Dr. Aleem. He talks about interferon. Now, let me tell you what interferon will do. Interferon does what the COVID is supposed to do or does. It enhances your immune system. That's what it does. It's not an antibiotic. Okay, it's not an anti-inflammatory. It enhances what we already have. It wakes your immune system up. It says stand up and be ready. And those T cells, the interferons, will begin to make a cascade effect to make folks, but in terms of your immune system entities, get stronger. If you think or you have symptoms and you've yet to get tested, you can begin the interferons. You know, you have to see a special doctor, et cetera. Charles will have some on soon, I'm sure. But that's how interferons work. It enhances your immune system. And the reason some people have poo-pooed it, because they've given it too late, and the people couldn't
You need to be taking this early, like before, before you get coronavirus.
Because what interferons will do is the same as the COVID vaccine does, in terms of it gives you fever. It's an inflammatory response because it's kicking butt in your body to say, get stronger. And some people couldn't tolerate that. So it had a I will just say, if I were to be positive for COVID, I would take some interferon. along with already having gotten my vaccine.
Got it. I don't know if we can get you for a few more minutes. If we were to take a break and then get you for a few more minutes, doctor, you got him? Okay, because we got a couple more questions here. Okay, hold on 1 second. Let me just take a quick break. We have Dr. Marilyn Quarter, faculty at Howard University College of Medicine, also chief of staff at United Medical Center and host of the Dr. Marilyn Quarter Show, or the Dr. Quarter Show on WOL AM FM in Washington, D.C. So we're talking about vaccine. She's giving us some really essential tips on how we get through coronavirus too, immune boosting, things of that sort. Also interferons, also another topic. And you're right, we will be bringing Dr. Aleem on at some point. But hold on 1 second, doctor, and take a...
Okay, now that's for just for the knowledge base of the listening audience. You heard her say that she had to, well, you didn't hear it, but she had taken the vaccine. But you heard what she said in reference to interferons and the treatment that Dr. Lean was doing. So that's just for the knowledge base of our listening audience, because there's been comments made in social media. Oh, this Dr. Lean is a quack and all that other stuff. But you heard.
I'm not even going to deal with the negative comment. I'm just saying, the thing is, so many people out here don't want to ever listen to an alternative view other than what the white man gave you. If the white man says it's good then. If a black man says it's good, then it has to be questioned. Now,
Hold on one second, Elliot.
Mm-hmm. The doctor said that she took the vaccination, but that it's also something that she would accept and take interferon because of what it does to the system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people just don't want to take the vaccination, but they want to boost their system to be able to fight the virus. So whereby, if you place yourself in a position to whereas you're not really exposing yourself to the corona, but you want to be able to boost your system, the interferon would be something that you may want to investigate and look at. Now, if you need to take the vaccination, hey, that's another story. But the point of the matter is, why as we as black people can't never be in a situation to lead ourselves to our liberation and our freedom? Why can't we never have our own take care of us? Why do we always have to look for the acceptance and the approval of the damn white man? This is what is happening. You know, we have a right to have a certain freedom and perspective that we would like to pursue without the approval of the white man. So what is wrong with that? If you want to take a vaccination, then you take it. But don't call me ignorant and stupid because I'm intelligent enough to question it and I don't want to take it. What is wrong with you? What is wrong with so many Americans? And we talk about we such a great country. But look at what the country just showed us on Wednesday. The white folks couldn't even come together and do what they were supposed to do or were under the auspices of doing. Taking over the government, making it so that Biden will take over on the 20th. They couldn't even do that halfway right. A bunch of nitwits. And didn't it show the form of theater that people just don't put into concept and understanding is the bastards, after it was all said and done, just walked away. Now, come on, man. Why was nobody putting tags or anything like that? What was no, you know, so now we're going to treat the white folks respectfully, and we're now going to use facial recognition and snitching and all the other BS to do what? Spend a whole bunch of money to do what? To put a couple in jail to be used as an example and to basically waste the taxpayers' money? It's just like this whole thing in New York City with this little white girl that attacked the little black boy and all of that. Let me tell you something. All they're going to do is spend $100,000 on this case, and when it's all said and done, she'll be lucky if she had to spend a year in jail. She'll be lucky. She'll wind up apologizing, paying a fine, being under some sort of probation, and then maybe having to do some community service back in California, and here it is, the taxpayers will have spent over $100,000 for what? For what? Other than that dumb white girl being placed in an anger management program, apologizing to the family, and then letting it be. So now they're going to exploit it to keep the system going to be able to pay these bastards and all this and that. And here it is, the taxpayers out of $100,000+ when it's all said and done, and they don't want to give people $2,000 to be able to pay the light bill, to maybe stay in their apartment and to eat. What the F is wrong with us as a people? Something is fundamentally wrong with us that we don't even understand the basics of civility and how to treat one another, and not allow these individuals to be using us so that they could keep their form of economic oppression on our necks. It's crazy. It's just like a guy that worked for the transit system in New York State, pulled out sick to go and protest some BS, and now he's going to lose damn near $100,000 a year job for BS. That's the type of ignorance and the stupidity that people are when they follow some dumb dog like Donald Trump. How do you follow somebody that don't have a plan, that told you he was going to do something, and then run into the bunker like a bitch? I'm sorry to say it, Elliot, but think about it. This man, think about it. You called out sick, lied, and now you're going to go and lose an $80,000 to $100,000 a year job that you're never going to get again. But some nonsense, following a complete fool that done manipulated you, lied to you, conned you, bamboozled you. Come on, man. Something is wrong. Are you not going to tell your kids and your wife, if you have kids and a wife, that I have no longer a job or anything of that nature? Because I follow the fool. How do you justify that? What is the justification of it? Knowing that you're working for an agency that they got your recognition now, they know that you called out sick, what do? They suspend you without pay, and they're going to set you up to fire you. And you'll be lucky. You'll be lucky if they decide we're not going to fire you, but we're going to give you 30 days without pay. Think about it.
Thank you for your contribution, brother.
It's real, though. But am I right or wrong, Elliot? Is it not real? And here it is. We all up in arms and happy about a war knock and in an ostrich or whatever, saying that we now get control of the Senate, but you got a white boy from West Virginia that's gonna manipulate you, play games, stick it to you every chance he get. But he's a good white man, though. On that note, talk to y'all later. I hope we have another show on Sunday talking about the vaccination, brother. I hope we do. I'm looking forward to it. Hotel.
Talk to you.
Talk to you.
Richard, we come to the end of another program, man.
Yes, yes. It's exciting.
You know, we've been hearing all kind of, and you know, it would bother me during the course of the year when I would hear our people repeat, you know, because you always hear it, whether you're watching the television or just seeing people in general. Europeans say, oh, this has been a terrible year. This, I'd be glad when this 2020 is over. This year is terrible. When, you know, anytime we have here that we could see on the face of this earth, it's good. Sure, you're going to have challenges. But I don't look at this year as being terrible. But, you know, the Almighty always have ways of showing who's boss, because if you look, this calendar year started out and you see what done happened. So as far as things is going, we could see that this year is going to be more the same and maybe worse, because you see how it started. Mm-hmm. So buckle your seatbelts. We still got to do what we got to do. The work still remains in front of us. So, you know, that's what myself and Brother Richard intend to do with this program, is keep putting information out there so our people can have an alternative to some of the other stuff that they might be hearing. We'll still try to put some accuracy or some accurate information out there, and then hope people can check, fact check behind us, because we ain't perfect. But we all trying to get the right, we all trying to get it straight, put it that way. Before we leave today, I want to let you know tomorrow from 4 to 6, Black Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers, and from 7 to 9 tomorrow evening, the Elders of Sankofa with Brother Alfonso Watkins, and then we'll be back on Sunday at 7. Until, I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. Children, soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of. Something, yeah.
save the children. To save the children.